The cave squig is an amalgamation of all of the worst qualities of a feral beast, the type of creature that any sane species would have eradicated centuries ago. Round, red, and bitey, this is the War Games Orchard. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Nathan Stone, and today we are bringing you the history of the squig in Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy. This will be our first episode diving into both games at the same time. Who'd have thunk that squigs would be the real thing to bring the two universes together? Before we get into that, I have a little bit of news to share with you this week. I'm going to be honest and say I did no hobbying whatsoever this past week. I've just been a little too busy. It's just not happening for me right now, which is unfortunate, but that is the way that life goes. However, I do have some exciting news for you. Firstly, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago on the show, and it bears mentioning again. By the time you're hearing this, the first issue of the Hero Hammer fan magazine is likely out. This magazine focuses on the great 90s era of Games Workshop games. It is designed to make you feel as if you are reading a White Dwarf magazine from 1995 or 6 or 3 or 8. It is a real labor of love from a lot of people. The very first issue is about Night Goblins, though you will find a lot of other content in there as well. We have stories, battle reports, modeling tips, painting tips. Everything that you remember from the White Dwarfs of the era is in this magazine. If you're a fan of 90s GW games, it's been so much fun to be a part of. I'm a very small part of this magazine. I write a lore article for it about the Night Goblins and Skarsnik, but there is so much here. It's a real nostalgic celebration of the era. You're going to be able to find this thing all over the place. If you search for Hero Hammer Fan Magazine on Facebook, maybe even on Google at this point, you should find this thing. If you can't find it, just hit me up. I will make sure that you get it. And it's one of the big influences for why I wanted to do this topic for the podcast. I've had squigs on the mind, thinking about Night Goblins and thinking about Skarsnik for the last little while in writing this article, and I need to get all of this squig energy out. So do check that out, guys. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Even if you didn't play during the era, it's still going to be a very fun read for you, I think. The second piece of news that I have for you today is about our Patreon. This is the time of the show where I shamelessly plug our War Games Orchard Patreon. We have some really fun stuff coming out in February. Scott and I sat down just the other day and recorded the bonus Patreon episode, and it's a fun one, guys. It is The Legend of Dimzad and Ludo. Scott and I made 100% randomized Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay First Edition characters. We sat down and rolled dice for literally every part of character creation, even the spots where you're not supposed to, and we got some real surprising and fun results. That episode is going to be up on the Patreon within the next couple of days, and if you want to check that out, our Patreon is not tiered. Any amount of donation will get you access to our bonus episodes. We now have 2 bonus episodes. There's also a Lizardmen story on there, and later on this month, I'm going to be sharing a story from the classic Warg the Orcs supplement that came out in 1991 that I can't find a place for on the show, but it's just too fun of a story to not record and not share with you guys. All of this Patreon stuff is accessible. We have last month's episode about the Shadow of the Horned Rat as well. You can get in on this stuff for $1 a month, and it really helps us out. If you're on the fence about it, the value for your dollar just keeps going up and up on the Patreon. Lots of fun stuff there. If you enjoy the show, please support us if you can. That's all for news. Now, let's get squiggly with it. We're going to start things off in Warhammer 40K. The reason for this is that unlike in most of Games Workshop's history, where Warhammer 40K has borrowed from its big brother Warhammer Fantasy, the history of squigs really begins in Warhammer 40K, and they're always a little bit more developed, even if there are less squig-based units in Warhammer 40K than there are in Warhammer Fantasy. To understand the genesis of the squig, we have to go back all the way to Rogue Trader and the Rogue Trader Orcs. I was recently listening to a Crown of Command podcast where Josh had a very interesting guest by the name of John. They've been going through and breaking down the old Epic Space Marine game. And when they got to the subject of the orcs in Epic, they happened to get on the topic of the orcs' loss of flavor over the years. And talking about how in Rogue Trader in 2nd edition and the original Epic, orc clans and orc culture and everything around the way that orcs wage war and live their lives, it was all there in the fluff, it was all there in the game. But as the years went on, and really starting around 3rd edition with the big 40K reboot, orcs started to lose a lot of that flavor. Everything kind of became the same, all of the clans operated in the same way, and they were really just names in a book, as opposed to being very diverse and different forces that they were in Rogue Trader in 2nd edition and in that first Epic release. And that got me thinking because I started in 3rd edition. I have a lot of fond memories of 3rd edition. The codexes were pamphlets, they were very cheap, and I liked that as a child. And I didn't really understand what had been lost in translation between 2nd and 3rd until I became an adult and started going back and researching some of this and started getting into 2nd edition a lot. And I have some really strong feelings about the difference between the Chaos Army in 2nd edition and 3rd edition. I kind of thought that they had really lost the most in that translation. But I think I was wrong. I think it was the orcs. Because going back and really diving into the orc fluff, especially the Rogue Trader fluff, the orc culture was so colorful, it was so characterful. There was a lot of the very stereotypical things that we see about orcs today, and we know them as in the modern era, but there was so much more to them than that. Their interactions with humanity, and the way they looked at the different races of the universe, the way they interacted with each other, with the way the clans interplayed, everything about it was just so much more. It was more bountiful. You could really dive into it so much more than the current fluff from 3rd edition onwards. If you're an orc enthusiast, I think there's one book that you must have, either a hard copy or a soft copy, and it's Warg the Orcs. And I'm not mispronouncing that, there is an R in this one. This was one of three orc books that came out during Rogue Trader. It is purely a fluff book. There is no rules in this one. This just tells you of the orc clans, the way they live, the way orc society works, and it might be one of the best supplements that Games Workshop has ever released. I have been reading this thing for the last couple of days, and I can't put it down. It's so interesting. Everything here is so fleshed out. They make these guys feel truly alive. And I love orcs in the modern era, but there's so much less to them than there is here. If you're a fan of orcs, really go back and read this. If you love the fluff like I do, this is everything orcs should be in 40K. It's incredible how much work went into this. And that so much of it was lost after 1998 is a real crime. I think there should be some kind of national inquiry. Perhaps you pull Games Workshop in front of the House of Lords in Britain and make them explain what they have done to orcs, because this is a crime. And I'm mortified that I never knew about this before and all of this incredible fluff. We're going to be spending the first bit of our episode in Warg the Orcs, because this supplement gives us our best ever look at squigs and the different squig varieties. Let's start off with the basics. What is a squig? You're probably thinking of the red, round, ball of teeth squig when I say the word. But that's actually only a little bit of the story, and it's more on the fantasy side than the 40k side, and I have some theories about why that is, but we'll save those until we get to fantasy. In 40k, squigs come in a variety of shapes and sizes and looks. The name squig is a short form for squiggly beast. They are part of the orc ecosystem. Wherever you will find orcs, you will find Gretchen, you will find Snotlings, and you will find squigs. The orc ecosystem is a very simple one, and a very robust one. The orcs eat the squigs, and squigs eat the waste that the orcs leave behind. You will find squigs most commonly in a place called the Drops. In an orcish city or encampment, there are places known as the Drops. These are holes. They are holes, and they are where the orcs poop. And the Gretchen and the Snotlings as well. A fun part of orc society is technically, orcs being the biggest, are allowed to poop wherever they like. This is, in fact, one of the few codified rules of orc society. Snotlings and Gretchen have to poop at the Drops. In practice, orcs prefer to poop there too. The Drops are a bit of a social toilet for the orcs. It's where they catch up with each other and discuss whatever the news of the day is. Within the Drops, you will find squigs. Squigs love to eat the refuse of the orcs and the Gretchen. And to harvest the squigs, so that they can fulfill their role in the food chain, often Gretchen and Snotlings are forced to hunt them through the Drops and dig around and try and find them. There are various types of squigs. Some are edible. Some are not. Some are edible, but will also try and eat you. Warg the Orcs describes for us 12 main varieties of squig, including edible, musical, hair, medical, parasite hunting, face eaters, pet, buzzing, and paint squigs. Each of these squigs has a purpose within orc society. The weirdness of the orc ecosystem is often put down to the fact that they are a genetically engineered race. And whomever designed them to be almost entirely self-sufficient and able to live in almost any environment. Everything that the orc ecosystem needs is pretty much a closed loop, which is an ingenious idea. Many think that the old ones were the ones that created the orc. They are confirmed to have created a species called the Cork, or the Core Orc, which, as described, does seem very similar to the orcs. It has never really been confirmed whether or not they are a race designed by the old ones. I tend to think that they were not, and they were probably designed by someone else, simply because the old ones tended to be a little bit more artisan with their races. However, all of this is conjecture. I do want to note that the illustrations of the squigs in this book, Warg the Orcs, are incredible. Just beautiful illustrations. They're hilarious. And the illustrations throughout the book are ingenious. The very first squig that it shows us is the cross between perhaps a hairless bulldog and a slug, with a tuft of fur that runs from its forehead all the way down to its tail. It's only got a couple of legs. It's only got front legs. Its back is kind of a slug, or just like a tail. It's got a huge underbite with some tusks sticking up. It honestly looks a little bit like my Shih Tzu. The first squig that we get the description for here is the Eaton squig. The Eaton squig looks like a bad loaf of bread with bulging bug eyes and just teeny tiny little feet sticking out of it. It looks like a sad sack of a thing. And this is the description we get for it. Virtually all squigs are edible, but some taste better than others. Some squigs have uses and are not usually eaten, but there are others that are really only any good as food. Squigs can be eaten raw or cooked. though orcs tend to prefer them cooked. Gretchen are quite adept at cooking squig, and have a number of methods: kebabbed, marinated in fungus wine, stuffed with fungus and herbs, roasted on a spit, deep-fried with fungus chips, or griddled over a campfire. Orcs will eat squigs raw if there are no Gretchen around to cook for them, or if they are too famished to wait for a proper meal. The really vicious face-eater squigs are kept for special squig-gobbling contests. A subset of the eaten squigs are the juicy squigs. The best eaten squigs live at the very bottom of the drop, and are not only rare, but very difficult to find and bring up from the depths. Since these squigs are seldom caught by the Gretchen and snotlings, they often grow quite large and become even tastier as they get older. This type of squig is best cooked by expert Gretchen servants, and usually only offered to gourmet knobs who can appreciate the finer aspects of orc culture. The eaten squigs are very interesting little beasts, and probably the most common type of squig because of their use as food. Next up is the parasite hunting squig. This squig, honestly, is my least favorite type of squig. Just the look of it makes me uncomfortable. It looks a little bit like a turtle shell with six legs sticking out of it, and the front of it is this wide, gaping mouth with horrid fangs and a long, lizard-like tongue coming out of this. Parasite hunting squigs are tiny but voracious feeders used to clear an orc's body and clothes of parasites. An orc simply drops a handful of these squigs into his clothing and lets them crawl around. The squigs prey on any lice, ticks, or leeches the orc may have acquired in the course of his many unsavory habits. When the engorged parasite hunting squigs drop out of the orc's clothing, the orc simply gathers them up and pops them into his mouth for a juicy chomp. Waste not, want not, as the orcs say. Again, this is the closed loop of the orc ecosystem at work here. The parasite squigs eat the parasites on the orcs eat the parasite squigs. The circle of life. Next up are the bag squigs. This type of squig has a large gaping mouth and a bag-like body that is almost entirely stomach. The stomach functions secondarily as a pouch that allows the squig to survive by slowly digesting food it stores up inside its body. If the squig is dried out, it can be made into a flask for drinks. If it is tan like leather, it makes a useful bag or belt pouch. The squigs may be the weirdest creatures in the Warhammer 40k lore. Next up we have the medical or menden squigs. The Bane Boys have discovered medicinal uses for some squigs, in particular the hairy squig. For the Pain Boy simply applies it to the open wound, which it holds closed with its tiny needle-like teeth. The Pain Boy then twists off its tail, leaving the head embedded in the flesh, repeating the process until the wound is riveted up. Alternatively, only one squig is used, and its tail threaded through the needle to sew up the wound. The hairy squig then feeds off the blood oozing from the wound, thus keeping it clean and free from infection. The squig can live like this for years if necessary. By the time it shrivels and drops off, the wound is usually healed, leaving a row of tiny holes on each side of the scar. Stitched wounds are prized by the orcs as battle scars and decorative adornments. Good use for hair squigs, and we'll come to hair squigs quite soon as well. Next up is one of my favorites, the face-eater squig. The illustration for this squig might be one of my favorite illustrations in the whole book, full of good illustrations. In this, an orc is holding what looks like a large snake over its head. The orc has his mouth open. The snake-like squig has its mouth-like open. It seems to be that they are going to both try and eat each other's faces and see who wins. This is a fun little tidbit of orky culture here. The face-eater squig. These squigs, which are also known as gnashers, are a vicious mass of sharp teeth and claws. In their active state, they appear to be just a gnashing mouth and very little else, though they look much like any other eaten squig when they are at rest. The most common and most vicious type of face eater has a strong tail which is used to anchor the squig to the side of the drop. The tail is tightly coiled like a spring, as the creature waits just below the surface of the murk, or hidden in the fungoid growths on the side of the pit. When a shadow falls across it, the squig springs out of hiding to take a bite out of an orc's backside, to rip off a Gretchen's arm, or to swallow an unfortunate snotling in just one gulp. Obviously, this type of squig makes the trip to the drops a bit hazardous. Because of their violent nature, gnashers provide the orcs with endless entertainment, and squig eating is one of the orcs' favorite pastimes. The idea behind this popular contest is to try and eat the gnasher squig before it has a chance to bite your face off. Orcs reckless enough to indulge in this sport grab the squigs by their tails and hold them up just above their faces. Then it's a race, squig mouth versus orc mouth, to see who gets eaten first. The Gretchen and orc observers howl with delight, and from a safe distance, as squig and orc rip into each other with ferocious, slobbering, teeth-gnashing gusto. On occasion, an orc keels over backwards with a squig firmly embedded in his face. In other instances, the orc manages to sink his great canine teeth into the squig and swallow it before it does any damage. Squig-eating contests are always accompanied by much betting, and a lot of teeth change hands during a series of contests. Teeth being the orc form of currency, which are actually just their teeth. All orcs regrow their teeth fairly regularly. That means that no orc is ever destitute for too long. A simple but effective economy. Next up are the pet squigs. These ones are called growlers, and the picture here is honestly just my dog. It's really incredible. If you look at it, it's a hairy little quadruped beast with big bushy eyebrows and a mouth full of snaggle teeth. Some squigs are lively enough to be kept as pets or mascots. Pet squigs are roughly the size of a small dog, hairy, and particularly vicious. A pet squig is allowed to scurry behind its master, barely under his control. This gives its owner no end of amusement, especially when the squig snaps at the ankles of another orc. Pet squigs are often kept by knobs and eccentric odd boys. They are doted on by their owners, fed on tidbits by Gretchen's servants, and exercised regularly by chasing snotlings. A particularly popular type of pet squig is known as the mimic. This squig has a beak-like mouth and is vaguely parrot-like in appearance. Mimics can be seen perched on the shoulders of many old and haggard orc, casting expletives and insults at passers-by. Here we get a sense of the wide variety of types of squigs and the preferred types of pets that orcs keep, mainly being vicious and foul-tempered. Now we get into some weirdness with the musical squigs, or, as the example, the squig pipes. This is kind of what you're thinking. Imagine a newt with no legs and various bagpipe-looking appendages sticking out of it. This special type of squig is used by the orc as a musical instrument. Several tube-like proboscis emanate from this squig's bag-like body. The musical squig can be tucked under one arm and inflated by blowing down a proboscis, then by squeezing the squig. Weird and terrifying sounds can be made through the creature's proboscis pipes. This turns the squig into a musical instrument, much like bagpipes, but 1,000 times more cacophonous. Orcs like to go into battle accompanied by the squirrel of the squig. This is pretty great. There's actually an entire section on orc music in this book. This is how cool this book is. The next section after that is about the orc gods Gork and Mork, and they're a little terrifying in the way that they are described here. Also a very interesting section on orcs and chaos and the relationship between the two. We're going to take just a slight little detour from our squig descriptions to mention one of the orc myths that's in this god section. This is the myth of the hunt that orcs hold about their two gods, Gork and Mork. In this story, Gork and Mork go looking for a gigantic squiggly beast and find it at the bottom of a huge cesspool. Also at the bottom of the cesspit is Nurgle, who is just hanging out there, I guess, and who has eaten all the snotlings. Gork and Mork clobber Nurgle so hard that he spews up all the snotlings who are still alive. Nurgle shrinks and becomes a squiggly beast. The snotlings then turn the squig into a feast for Gork and Mork. This myth clearly represents the orc triumph over Nurgle. Orcs have no fear of the realms of Nurgle and happily thrive on the squiggly beasts that breed in their cesspits. Certainly this is written from a slightly orky perspective. I'm sure that the servants of Nurgle might see that in some other way. But this is the kind of thing you will get in this book. There's a great section on orcs in the Imperial cult and what they think of the Emperor. It's really fascinating stuff. Now we come to paint squigs. The paint squig looks, for all intents and purposes, like a bladder with a tongue coming out of it. It is really gross looking. This small, vividly colored squig excretes powerful dyes that are used as a war paint. These paints are also used by the Gretchen artists as pigments for wall paintings and decorative banners. Many paint squigs have tufts of hair on their tails, which allows the artist to use the squig as both the brush and the tube of paint simultaneously. The shells of edible squigs are also used by Gretchen artists as paint pots and palettes. Just looking at the picture of the paint squig, if you had told me that there was a tuft of hair, a shell, or any discernible features at all, I would have been somewhat skeptical. Now we come to the flesh eaters. These squigs are particularly interesting. Imagine a rat, but also imagine that its head was about 3 times the size of a normal rat's head and sunken back further into its body, and you'll have a pretty good idea of the flesh eaters. And orcs breed these guys for teeth. In order to increase their wealth, some orcs breed large, ferocious beasts known as flesh eaters. The flesh eater has a great gaping mouth like a crocodile, full of rows of sharp fangs, similar to an orc's canine teeth. Flesh eaters continually shed and replace their teeth, and all the orcs have to do is send a Gretchen in to fetch the old ones. Needless to say, the Gretchen aren't overly keen on this duty. Like orc teeth, flesh eater teeth also deteriorate over a few years. Flesh eaters are extremely long-lived, but rarely breed in captivity, making them even more valuable. Most orcs who own flesh eaters are either already knobs, or become knobs on account of their wealth. Not surprisingly, impoverished orcs sometimes attempt to steal a flesh eater, or even raid a rival settlement to capture them. Finally, we come to the hair squig. The hair squig looks like a leech, but instead of the long, worm-like body of a leech, it is a big ol' lock of hair. And they are some of the weirdest squigs that you can encounter. The body and head of the hairy squig are small and consist mainly of tiny claws and a mouth full of spiny teeth. The tail is a long tuft of hair, often of spectacular color. These squigs are harvested in vast numbers to provide the naturally hairless orcs with their mops and mohawks. The orc gets his Gretchen servants to put the squigs on his bald head, where they latch on, digging in with their teeth and claws. The squigs can live there indefinitely, drawing nutrients from the skin of the orc. Each squig makes a tuft of hair, and hundreds need to be plugged in to make a whole head of hair. Since hairy squigs come in a wide variety of forms and colors, and can be trimmed or dyed, the orcs choose from a range of styles to differentiate between clans or express their individuality. One of the great mysteries of human civilization, according to the orcs, is why humans only manage to breed such poor, limp specimens of hairy squigs. Orcs feel sorry for humans, who seem limited in choice to a few miserable yellow, brown, or black squigs. All attempts to barter squigs with humans have failed, since humans seem to be too stupid to appreciate the better quality of orcish breeds of squig. I'm going to call this right now as my favorite bit of lore in 40K history. Just that, those last few sentences. It doesn't get better than that, ladies and gentlemen. It really doesn't. I think we've reached it. We've reached the pinnacle of 40K. That's going to do it for Warg the Orcs. And what a fun book it is. The squig descriptions just scratch the surface. Now let's look at the way that squigs have been portrayed in the actual game of Warhammer 40K. Squigs often find their way into upgrades, as opposed to being units themselves. In this way, it differs from Warhammer Fantasy, where you have units that are primarily about the squigs, notably the squig herders, squig hoppers, mangler squigs, giant squigs, etc. The only real units that you see in 40K that are squig-centric, or are primarily a squig model, come in the form of the Forge World models for the Squigoth and the Giant Squigoth. These guys have been around at least since the very first incarnation of Epic. And they were the specialty of the Snakebite clan, an orky clan that prefers the old ways of doing things, and they raise a lot of various war beasts. They're very good with squigs, and they go into battle often on the backs of warboars, and their giant squigoths are basically akin to the super heavy tanks of the Imperium or other orc clans. We're not going to look at the Forge World stuff today, though. We're going to stay in the realm of regular 40K. The first place we're going to go is in 2nd edition. Now, I'm not covering every single piece of Squig war gear or unit that makes use of some kind of Squig. This is just a highlights of Squigs in Warhammer 40K, and we're going to do the same with Fantasy. We're not going to hit every unit. It would just be too long. It would have to be a multiple-part episode, and I don't think it would be as interesting as this will be. The unit that I'd like to highlight for you in 2nd edition is the Squig Catapult. The Squig Catapult is a fun little device. It looks for all the world like a catapult from Warhammer Fantasy. In fact, if you have the model, you could have it do double duty in a Hero Hammer Orc and Goblin army, as well as use it in 40K. Squig catapults are made from box girders and scrap metal scavenged by the orcs from crashed and wrecked vehicles. The metal is fashioned into girder-like sections, perforated with large holes to reduce the weight and bulk. These sections are bolted together before the battle and can be carried about at other times by runt servants. The catapult operates by a simple mechanism. The ammunition, a pot full of dangerous buzzer squigs, is loaded into the holder mounted on the long arm that is held under tension by powerful springs. The arm is wound back by a handle and fastened with a catch operated by a lever. When the catapult is loaded, the lever is released and the arm flings the pot of squigs towards the target. This is a fun little device. Buzzer squigs had their own template in 2nd edition. They looked like a swarm of insects. Imagine a squig from Warhammer Fantasy, but bug-sized with wings, and they would just bite you to pieces. That's kind of what I get the sense of a buzzer squig being. Like many war machines in 2nd edition, the Squig Catapult has a ton of rules, but it functions somewhat similar to the way you might expect. You would choose a direction to fire, guess how many inches between you and your target, and then it would scatter using the artillery dice, and it had its own fun little misfire chart. What was really interesting about the Squig Catapult is what it did to things that it hit. We're going to read through the types of the damage that it can do, because it, like many of the orky war machines in 2nd edition 40K, had the possibility of just being completely devastating. Although the Squig Catapult is a fairly inaccurate weapon, this doesn't matter very much, because once the buzzer squigs are released, they are perfectly capable of finding their own target. When the pot lands, it bursts open and a swarm of enraged squigs pours out. Buzzer squigs won't eat orcs, Gretchen, or snotlings because they dislike the taste of the symbiotic algae that flows through the bloodstreams of these creatures. However, the swarm will attack any other creature. Any troops or vehicles touched by the swarm template must attempt a save by making the D6 saving row indicated below. Any that fail the save are eaten alive and removed as casualties. If a vehicle fails its save, its crew are all slain, but the vehicle itself is unharmed. A robot or dreadnought that fails its save has its circuitry consumed and is rendered completely useless. The buzzer squigs can kill just about anything. What's interesting about this is you only get the save that is listed here. Your armor saves, your special saves from things like force fields do not apply to these rules. And it can be a really good way around models with very good armor saves. So here is the saving throw chart. If you are an Avatar, a Greater Demon, or a Hive Tyrant, congratulations, you automatically make the saves. The buzzer squigs are just not big enough to eat you. However, vehicles, robots, dreadnoughts, and carnifexes have to save on a 2+, so there's still a chance that they could fail. Fully enclosed power armor, aspect armor, and Terminator armor saves on a 3+, and if you've ever tried to get through Terminator armor in 2nd edition, this is a good way to do it. 3+ sounds like a really good save, but considering Terminators normally save on a 3+ on 2d6 in 2nd edition, this is a big downgrade for them. Demons, Gene Stealers, and any Tyranids save on a 4+. They're probably just not that tasty. And any other troops in the game only save on a 5+ or are automatically removed. Again, this catapult could be absolutely devastating. It's a really fun little thing. It's also cheap in points as well. Beyond this, The swarm template from your squig catapult is not automatically removed after the first turn. If the swarm has caused one or more casualties, roll a d6 on the table below to see if the buzzer squigs disperse. If the buzzer squigs are still hungry, they remain in play and continue to move randomly in each subsequent orc turn. Use the scatter dice to determine the direction the swarm moves and roll 2d6 to see how far it goes. The swarm automatically attacks all targets that it moves over, except for orcs, Gretchen, and Snotling, of course. If the swarm causes one or more casualties during the move, then test again to see if the buzzer squigs are still hungry. And you would roll a d6 to test for the hunger of the buzzer squigs. On a 1 to 3, the squigs are sated, and they become docile, and they just rest, and they are removed. On a 4 to 6, they're still hungry, and they will keep going. Finally, the misfire table here. If you were to roll a misfire on the artillery dice on a 1 or 2, the catapult is destroyed. It simply cannot take the strain and breaks under the tension. On a 3 to 4, you get an oops. One of the crew is thrown high into the air in lieu of the squig pot. The Gretchen crashes to the ground 2d6 inches away from the catapult's aiming point, in a direction indicated by the scatter dice. The Gretchen is killed on impact, and anything unfortunate enough to be standing under the point where the Gretchen lands takes a strength 3 hit with a -1 saving throw modifier. Easily the funnest of these. And on a 5 to 6, it may not shoot. There is a minor fault. Earlier we were talking about flavor, and the flavor of orcs and goblins. And in second edition, they still had so much of that rogue trader era fun and depth to their fluff and the extra silliness. To me, the orcs and goblins of second edition play a lot like the Skaven play in Warhammer Fantasy, where they have all sorts of wonderful weapons that may or may not work at any given time, but can be absolutely devastating. As we moved into the 3rd to 7th edition eras, orcs changed so much. We lost so much of the rules around the clans, around all of the fun weapons that they used to have, and everything got very streamlined. When we see squigs again in a major way is in the 4th edition Orc Codex in the Tank Busta's entry, and this is an ongoing theme in 40k where squigs tend to be war gear and upgrades as opposed to straight up models. The 4th edition Orc and Goblin book lasted for quite a long time, I believe, because they didn't get a 5th edition codex. I almost think they didn't get a 6th edition codex either. Tankbusters are a fun unit, and I think they're one of the better additions to the orc codexes of the later eras. They had some really fun orky war gear, like a tank hammer, which is just a rocket on a stick that they would run up and hit a tank with. And I love that so much. I think that's really fun. One of the things they got, and I remember these models, and maybe Games Workshop still sells these models, I don't know, is the Bomb Squig. The Bomb Squig is an incredible little piece of war gear. You didn't actually need the model for it. The models were just there as decorations or to denote that the unit did have these this Bomb Squig upgrade. And I'm going to share with you the rules for the Bomb Squig in 4th edition. Enterprising Tank Busters exploit the Squig's natural tendency to chase anything that moves. A Tank Buster may release a Bomb Squig instead of shooting. Roll a dice. On the roll of 2+, the Bomb Squig will run straight into the nearest enemy vehicle within 18 inches and detonate, causing a strength 8 hit on the section of the vehicle facing the Tank Buster. On the roll of a 1, the Squig will run straight into the nearest friendly vehicle within 18 inches and detonate there instead. Remove the Bomb Squig once it's been released, whether or not they are in range of their target. Bomb Squig models are purely decorative and do not have a profile. The best thing about this Bomb Squig rule is probably that we got the Bomb Squig models, and these were the classic Warhammer Fantasy round squigs with dynamite just strapped everywhere to them and in their mouths, and they are and were hilarious models. The rule itself is okay. A single strength 8 hit against a vehicle might do something depending on what vehicle is closest to you. Against light vehicles, it's great. Against heavier vehicles, not so much. But there is something undeniably funny about orcs strapping ludicrous amounts of explosives to squigs, and then the squigs go and chase these vehicles because they see them moving. And I do really like the part where they could blow up your own vehicles as well. And honestly, if you roll that one, your vehicle is probably in trouble, as orc vehicles, not the best armor in general, and certainly not the best side or rear armor where this squig could be facing. Something interesting happened to tank busters in the modern era. In their current 8th edition codex, the Squig Bomb is back. What's really neat about it, though, is that this time it has a profile. For every 5 tank busters in your unit, you can take up to 2 bomb squigs, which means in a maximum-sized unit, you can get 6 bomb squigs. Bomb squigs have a profile in 8th and 9th edition of 40k. They are movement 5, weapon skill 2+, ballistic skill 2+, strength 3, toughness 4, 1 wound, 1 attack, leadership 4, with a 6-up save. Not a very good profile at all, but that's not their point. Bomb squigs are armed with squig bombs. And it's a ranged weapon for them. It's assault 1, strength 8, AP minus 2, with D6 damage. And this weapon cannot target units that can fly. After making an attack with this weapon, the bearer is slain. This represents the orcs loosing the squigs. Usually they have to move with the orcs, but when they spot a target they want to go after, they can release these squigs and they will run up to 18 inches. They will hit on a 2+ with a strength 8, AP minus 2, D6 damage. That sounds pretty good to me. It's really, really fun. It's really funny. The orcs ignore the death of bomb squigs for purposes of morale as well, which is pretty good. And I like the fact that the squigs actually get a profile here. It kind of acknowledges that they are creatures as well that can fight, even though their profile is nothing compared to their profiles in Warhammer Fantasy. The other place that it's worth mentioning that we see them in the modern era of 40k is the Orc War Boss as an upgrade for him. He can take an attack squig. And this has been represented on the Orc War Boss model that came out in a box set, I believe against Space Wolves, and I think his name is Gruk Face Ripper. And he has a big old squig on his base that is his attack squig. Again, they went with the Warhammer Fantasy Big Red Ball squig for this. I think this is the popularity of that Warhammer Fantasy squig just bleeding into 40k. Which is a little unfortunate in a way, because the squigs in 40k are way more diverse than the squigs in Warhammer Fantasy. And there was a War Boss model during 3rd edition who had an attack squig as well on his model. And it was much more of the classic early squigs, where they're like these weird snake dog things. And I like those better for 40k. I think that the fantasy squigs should stay in fantasy, but I think that ship has sailed now. I think most squigs get the big red ball treatment at this point. The attack squig is a fun little extra melee weapon for the war boss. It hits at strength 4 at AP minus 1 and does 1 damage. And each time that the war boss fights, it can make 2 additional attacks with the attack squig. Just an extra couple little okay attacks in close combat. Nothing to write home about, but not terrible either. The story of squigs in 40k is one of missed opportunity, I think. Beyond Rogue Trader and 2nd Edition, they get sidelined in a lot of the orky fluff. I think there's room for squigs in 40k, either as units of attack squigs, something like a Warhound or the Fenrisian Wolves for the Space Wolves, a Beast unit, or as a swarm. I would love to see a Squig Swarm, maybe a special type of Runt Herd to lead that unit, or even a return of the Squig-based weaponry. We still have the incredible Shock Attack Gun that launches Snotlings through the warp. I think that the Squig Catapult could make an appearance again. It appeared in Epic as well as an even bigger tank-like vehicle during those early days. There's so much of the orc culture, backstory, and clans that really isn't represented in modern-day 40k, and it's a real shame. It's criminal that we can get 1,000 different Space Marine supplements and books. While, I'll come out and say it, the orcs got more character development in Warg the Orcs and the 2 other Rogue Trader era books that they received than Space Marines have had, just in general. They are far more interesting, and I think Games Workshop leaves money on the table by not fleshing out more of their races and just sticking to doing 40k Space Marine Skittles versions. Before I get into a rant on the choices of a very successful company, let's switch our gears and move into Warhammer Fantasy and talk about the way that Squigs have evolved over the eras of that game. The Squigs of Warhammer Fantasy are quite different from the Squigs of 40K. We aren't introduced to quite as many varieties, and the one that really steals the show is the Cave Squig. These squigs are the nasty red balls of hate that we have come to know and love as the most famous of all squig shapes and sizes. Their lore is very different in Warhammer Fantasy, and unlike in 40K, it's not tied to the orc and goblin ecosystem. Orcs and goblins in the Warhammer world seem to have less dealings on the whole with squigs, except for the night goblins. The night goblins use squigs in a variety of forms and functions, not the least of which being conflict and combat, but squigs have also become an important part of their society and culture. Before we really get into the squigs of Warhammer Fantasy, it's always been somewhat of a mystery as to why the orcs exist in Warhammer Fantasy. One popular fan theory that I personally really like is that when the Old Ones came to the Warhammer world and first started to terraform it with their servants, they inadvertently carried orc spores on their ships, and that's how orcs and goblins came about. This doesn't explain why the orcs of Warhammer Fantasy and 40K are so different in terms of their inbuilt genetic memories are quite different. In 40K, orcs have a variety of inbuilt skills, the mech boys being a big example of this, orcs that just have a knowledge of how machines go together and how those work. In fantasy, we don't see this same kind of genetic specialization with orcs. My own personal theory that works off of this theory that they came as spores on the Old One ships is that these orcs in Warhammer Fantasy are an older breed of greenskin that was still undergoing whatever genetic engineering that their creators used to create the greenskins of 40K. Basically, my thoughts are that these are proto-orcs and goblins. This is why they're missing a lot of the traits that we would come to know for 40K orcs. When you think about when the Old Ones disappeared in the Warhammer world, it's only about 5,000 years before the modern Warhammer Fantasy era. And if you believe the theory that Warhammer Fantasy and 40K exist in the same timeline, and that the Warhammer Fantasy world is somewhere in the 40K universe, this means that when the Warhammer Fantasy timeline takes place, as we know it, the modern timeline to be, is still very early in 40K's development, well before the Imperium of Man or any of that nonsense. And the orcs that we see in fantasy could be an earlier version of the orcs that would later come to plague the 40K galaxy. This is my tinfoil hat segment of the show, by the way. Nathan's crazy alien conspiracy theories for Warhammer Fantasy. It's just something that I kind of wanted to mention, because the orcs and goblins are so similar between the two properties in a lot of ways, but in a lot of important ways they are very different, and one of them is the lack of squigs as part of the orcoid ecosystem in Warhammer Fantasy. Certainly, they lack the same degree of prominence as in 40K. We're going to start our look at squigs in fantasy in the Hero Hammer era. This is where squigs really come into being in Warhammer Fantasy. We're looking at the 4th edition Orc and Goblin book, very good book. This entry tells us all about the Cave Squig. Night goblins cultivate different kinds of fungus and molds in their meandering caves and tunnels. They also descend into deeper caverns to search for wild and exotic funguses, which they use to make powerful magic potions. Night goblins are not the only creatures that like to eat fungus, so they have to be constantly on the lookout for dangerous subterranean denizens. One of the most deadly of all of these creatures is the elusive cave squig. These are hybrid creatures, part fungus and part flesh, with tough, ball-shaped bodies and clumsy, taloned feet. Cave squigs have huge, gaping mouths, thronged with slashing teeth. An enraged cave squig can bite a larger creature clean in two and can easily swallow a night goblin whole. Over the many hundreds of years that the night goblins have lived in the tunnels, they have become quite used to dealing with these fearsome creatures. Roasted cave squig is considered a great delicacy, and captive cave squigs are kept as pets by night goblin chieftains. Night goblins hunt cave squigs using long, sturdy forks called prodders to goad the squigs from their hiding places and to keep the enraged beasts at bay. Once a squig has been provoked from its lair, night goblins throw nets over it and then bash it senseless with large clubs so it can be safely dragged away. Some night goblins become very proficient squig hunters and come to be quite nonchalant about the dangers involved. Famous squig hunters are happy to exhibit their skills with daring spectacles such as squig wrestling, tunnel racing, squig pit leaping, and bareback squig riding. As we can see, the cave squig is an important part of night goblin culture. I want to share with you a short story written by a friend of the show. His name is Gert-Jan van Houten. And Gert, I'm so sorry about what I just did to your name there. I do not know the proper pronunciation, and I'm very sorry about that. Gert is an awesome guy. He is a friend and patron to the show. He is also a contributor and editor of the Hero Hammer fan magazine. And he wrote this little story specifically for the magazine. This story is all about a pair of squig hunters. And as soon as I read it, I thought that it was the perfect synopsis of what I imagined a squig hunt to be. And Gert was generous enough to let me share it with you today. We're going to have Gert on the show at some point, for sure, at least to help me pronounce his name properly and to spend some time and hang out with us. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy his story. Every slight sound made Gricket tighten his grip on his club and look around skittishly. The night goblin was down in the dark, mostly abandoned tunnels on a mission. A mission he didn't like one bit. Capturing squigs for the boss's herd. Gricket almost dropped his club when a sharp voice near his left ear pierced the stillness.
"Get a hold on yourself, you slime-faced son of a stunty."
The voice belonged to Skernik, who didn't look afraid. He never looked afraid. Which, come to think of it, was probably the reason he joined the squig hunters in the first place. Skernik casually dragged his net behind him as they traversed the dark underground maze, looking for the group of hunters from which they had become separated when one of the captured squigs broke loose and scattered the goblins every which way. Gricket had felt a bit easier when he stumbled onto Skernik, but only a bit.
"There's nothing to worry about,"
Skernik reassured his hunting buddy.
"I can smell them squigs, and I ain't smelling nothing. I think..."
But Gricket would never find out exactly what Skernik was thinking. An enormous squig jumped out at the goblins from behind a rocky outcrop and gobbled up the netter in two big bites. The squig's impact had knocked Gricket back, and, to add insult to injury, his trusty club had bounced out of his reach. Then the beast turned around, Skernik's net still partially hanging out of its mouth. The squig leapt at Gricket. Carefully, Gricket opened his eyes. Inches from his nose was a snarling mass of teeth and claws, but the squig hadn't eaten him. The net had caught on a small stalagmite and seemed to hold despite the squig's furious thrashing. Not wanting to put his luck or the strength of the goblin-made net to the test any further, Gricket scrambled for his club and eventually managed to beat the squig into submission. He put the net around the squig properly, tucked his club into his belt, and started dragging his quarry back towards civilization. The boss would be pleased with such a mighty catch. A great little tale there. You can find that tale and so much more in the first issue of the Hero Hammer fan magazine, which focuses on night goblins and all things night goblin-y. Thanks again for Gert for letting me share that with you today. While we're hanging out in the Hero Hammer era, we should take the opportunity to discuss the cave squigs of Warhammer Fantasy in terms of stats and gameplay. In this era, we have two main squig units to choose from: squig hunters and squig herds as a single unit, and night goblin squig hoppers as the other. The units of squig hunters are made up of goblin herders, which were usually represented by a pair of goblins on a cavalry base, carrying a long pitchfork-like prodder, and a number of squigs. This unit had a lot of rules. Rules about movement and if the squigs become separated from the herders, if the herders die. A lot of times, what would happen when you took a squig herder unit in a game was that your goblins would in fact die and the squigs would go wild. A cave squig, when left to its own devices, has random movement. And the orcs and goblins in Warhammer Fantasy tended to have random movement as a theme. There was no other army that did random movement to the same degree that the orcs and goblins did. You had things like squigs, squig hoppers, snotling pump wagons, night goblin fanatics, mangler squigs, and more that all had random movement roles. Games Workshop apparently deciding that this was going to be the orc and goblin thing in fantasy to move utterly randomly. Let's look at the stats of a cave squig. A cave squig moves 2d6, has weapon skill 4, ballistic skill 5, strength 5, toughness 3, 1 wound, initiative 5, 2 attacks, and leadership 2. This is a pretty scary unit, all things considered. 2 weapon skill 4, strength 5 attacks is not bad by any stretch of the imagination and pretty much in any era. It allowed squigs to do what they do in the fluff, which is bite pretty much anything in half in a single go. There wasn't much in the game that didn't have to fear a unit of squigs hitting it. There were a few things that could stop the squigs from being effective, however, and a lot of that is the way you had to set up the unit and the way you had to take casualties. You would set up all of your squigs in the front rank, and your night goblin squig hunters behind them. When the enemy shot at you, you would randomize the hit. On 1 to 3, it would hit a squig. On a 4 to 5, it would hit a goblin. And on a 6, you got to roll again. This way, there was a slight bias towards hitting the squigs instead of the goblins. In practice, I feel like the goblins just got hit constantly. Both were toughness 3 with no armor save, generally. These are not ultra-tough units by any stretch of the imagination. If enough goblins were killed, your squigs would start to go wild. Each goblin prodder team can control up to 3 squigs. If there's more than that, the remaining squigs will go wild. When a squig goes wild, they move 2d6 in a random direction. You would use the scatter dice to determine which direction they would move in. If the squigs met anything, enemy troops or friendly troops, they would have counted as charging them, and they would fight that unit. The squig unit is not one you want in the middle of your battle line, certainly, in case all of the squigs go wild. They can mess up a lot of things here. Now, after that first turn, what would happen more in practice is that the squigs would go wild, run into a regiment, either yours or your enemy, and then do some damage but lose on combat resolution and then break with their leadership of 2 and flee off the board. Or they would just die as they were toughness 3 with 1 wound and no armor save. But don't underestimate the effectiveness of a bunch of strength 5 attacks at weapon skill 4 and initiative 5. They could certainly do some damage. A very fun unit to use, if not reliable, which I think I could say about the majority of orcs and goblins more specialized units. The other one that we should look at is the Squig Hopper. These guys are hilarious. The legend of the Squig Hoppers began with a single goblin hopping on top of a squig when the squigs broke out of their pen because he thought that might be the safest place to be. Both him and the squig ended up impaled by a stalactite, but the other goblins all saw this and thought it was the coolest thing in the whole world. So the more carefree and perhaps less sane night goblins will ride squigs into battle. And riding is a loose term in this case. Generally what they do is they jump on the squigs and then hold on for dear life as the squigs try to violently eject them. What was neat about this unit is that they were basically the wild squigs that you see in the other ones. They would bounce around 2d6 in the movement phase, but you could nominate the direction that they go in. However, if you rolled a double at all, they would go in a random direction. So You could control them, but not entirely, and often they would just bounce somewhere. You would buy these squig hoppers together, and once the battle started, you hoped that they stayed somewhat together, but really there was no way that you could guarantee that. What's funny is they had a special rule about fighting, where if the squig lands on a unit, the squig will automatically attack that unit. The goblin has the choice, which was useful if the squig hopper landed on one of your own units. Also, when a squig hopper landed on an enemy unit, the enemy unit could not fight back. As they were too surprised to react in time to return blows, you could, however, as the enemy, charge a squig hopper unit, and that way you could fight it normally. The squig has the same profile that we just explored, and the goblin is a normal goblin, don't expect too much from him. These units paved the way for what would come later on. As we traveled through the editions, we saw the introduction of larger and larger cave squigs. And speaking of those larger cave squigs, we're going to take a little look at where we ended up with Warhammer Fantasy and cave squigs. The hunters stuck around, as did the hoppers, through from 4th edition onwards, but we did get a couple of other options in the forms of the giant squig and the colossal squig, and two giant squigs chained together to become mangler squigs in what has to be the worst idea that any goblin has ever had. Our next destination is 8th edition. We're going to see where the squigs ended up in the latter era of Warhammer Fantasy. And as I mentioned, our squigs got bigger. We were introduced to the Great Cave Squig. Only the most fungus-covered night goblin lairs attract the Great Cave Squig, an even larger and more ferocious version of the Cave Squig. The fangs of these beasts are as long as swords, and they will snap at anything that moves in front of them. Their hides are tough and leathery, and their small eyes gleam with mad fury. As one might expect, these powerful squigs are greatly prized, although it takes an equally crazed night goblin to hang on to such a hard-bounding creature. As the great cave squigs are ridiculously dangerous to capture, to ride one into battle is quite an achievement for a night goblin big boss or war boss. The process of breaking in a great squig costs many night goblin lives, but once the beast learns to accept a rider, they serve as more stable mounts than smaller squigs. This allows the rider a free hand to fight in close quarters instead of just hanging on for dear life. When grouped with squig hoppers, great cave squigs lead the pack. Although they are costly, eating over twice their own body weight daily, ideally in dwarfs or the right kind of mushroom, great cave squigs are still the preferred mount for any right-thinking and insanely daring night goblin. The Great Cave Squig was an interesting and fun addition to Warhammer Fantasy. Your army general could be mounted on a Cave Squig. The Cave Squig itself had some interesting stats. It had a 3d6 movement, weapon skill 4, strength 5, toughness 4, 3 wounds, initiative 3, 3 attacks, and leadership 3. It was a monstrous beast. The Great Cave Squig is not an incredibly competitive choice for a monstrous mount. However, it was always a fun thing to see on the table. One of the most interesting things that you could do with a great cave squig is join units of squig hoppers with this character to give them a little bit of extra oomph. This was a trade-off, as you couldn't join any other type of unit, since no one really wants to be that close to a great cave squig. When we get two cave squigs together, we find ourselves with mangler squigs. Other greenskins claim that living underground has driven night goblins mad, and it might be true. One thing for certain, only the unhinged would try to catch a great cave squig, and only absolute maniacs with little regard for life would dare chain two great cave squigs together and then prod them towards the enemy. Known as mangler squigs, or occasionally chain squigs, or great squig knockers, these bounding balls of destruction can tear apart a battle line with brutal savagery, alternatively pulling, yanking, and dragging each other along. The two fettered great squigs hustle forwards. There is a token attempt by the night goblins to steer the mangler squigs by chaining a few foolish volunteers directly onto the furious beasts. This crew, if they can be called that, preserve some notion of goading the rolling monsters in a direction. However, this fades the moment the creatures first move, and is altogether gone by the time they hit anything. The Mangler Squigs are one of my favorite additions in the later era of Warhammer Fantasy to the Orc and Goblin roster. The Orcs and Goblins in Fantasy have always been blessed with one of the biggest rosters of troops, units, and monsters in the game, and these guys were super fun, especially if you really wanted to lean hard into the Squig theme. They were completely random, which is how Games Workshop thought Orcs and Goblins should play. I'm going to share with you here a little vignette that appears on their unit entry that describes what I assume is exactly what happens most times that Mangler Squigs make it into a unit. The Iron Breakers formed a living wall across the passageway, their backs against the last gateway protecting the hold above. The Night Goblins had tried for days to breach this tunnel, but the dwarves had held firm, their nigh-impenetrable armor blocking the feeble strikes of the Greenskins, while their own axes claimed the lives of many foul grobby. The dwarves were tired, but unyielding. They had fought the Night Goblins enough not to trust this lull in the fighting, suspecting some new trickery. Sounds could be heard on the other side of the mound of goblin corpses that blocked the tunnel, and soon two immense squig beasts emerged over the pile. The creatures snorted with rage as they were prodded down the passageway. When the squigs caught dwarf scent at the end of the hallway, no further goading was needed, and they bounded forward. The beasts were chained together, and they stumbled over each other, crashing against the narrow confines. Yet, for all their commotion, the tumbling did not slow their pace, but accelerated it to a breakneck speed. Each snarling fiend whipped the other around in a dizzying whirl, until all that could be seen were flashes of teeth, swirling chain, or a semi-pulped night goblin who was tied onto one of the squigs. The dwarves raised their shields against the living thunderbolt, but to no avail. The rotating squigs scattered the dwarves like skittles, and smashed straight into the gate beyond with a resounding clang. Although a few of the severed limbs still twitched, not a thing was still alive. The pathway into the dwarf hold was opened, and the night goblin assault began in earnest. That sounds about right to me. Mangler Squigs are a almost completely randomized unit. Their movement was 3d6. They had no weapon skill or ballistic skill. Their strength was 6, their toughness was 4, and they had 3 wounds. They were initiative 3, they had an asterisk by their attacks, and they were leadership 3. When Mangler Squigs moved through a unit, friend or foe, they moved a little bit like Night Goblin Fanatics, where they would impact a unit and then pop out the other side. When they did this, they inflicted 2d6, strength 6, armor-piercing hits. Once the Mangler Squigs impacted a unit, they would do their attack, which was Kersplat, which is as I just described. Afterwards, they were considered to have gone crazy. Mangler Squigs that make a Kersplat attack go wild, their Night Goblin crew either being pulped to death or too busy holding on to even attempt to control the Squigs' direction. Once Mangler Squigs have gone crazy, they will move in a random direction when they move in the compulsory move subphase. You could control them up to the very first time that they impact against a unit. Afterwards, you were at the mercy of RNG. You couldn't even really charge Mangler Squigs, but you could move into contact with them. And any unit that moved into contact with Mangler Squigs took 2d6 strength 6 hits for moving into the squigs, and then a further d6 strength 6 hits due to the Mangler Squig's death throws, and all of those hits were armor-piercing. The Mangler Squig was then removed, and the unit could carry on with its move, assuming there was anyone left in the unit to do that. They also had some other movement rules, much like Fanatics do, where they could impact other things or kill themselves. It was a real grab bag what these beasties would do for you. However, I do remember them being quite popular in 8th edition, just for the potential and the way that your enemy kinda had to deal with them. Before we get to the Colossal Squig, there is one other type of Forgeworld Squig that we should hit on. We're not going to go into its full profile, because we just don't have the time, unfortunately. However, it's so bizarre and strange that I couldn't possibly leave it out completely. This is the Night Goblin Squig Gaba. This creature is an artillery piece for the Orcs and Goblins. And it's a very strange creature. It is a relative to the cave squig, in between the size of the great cave squig and the colossal cave squig. The squig gaba shares similar features between itself and its red bouncy brethren. It does have a more distinct tail and legs than most squigs in the modern era. It is also shown with horns and spikes going down its back. It, to me, looks like more of a throwback to the original squigs of Warhammer 40k, but perhaps crossed with the modern-day squigs of fantasy. Its fluff is tremendously weird. These giant squigs are tied down in battle by the night goblins. The goblins then feed them lesser squigs that have been coated in what is basically a toxin. This toxin is designed to taste bad and to stop the squig gaba from swallowing the squigs. This is, like anything else with orcs and goblins, not a 100% foolproof plan. When the goblins have loaded enough squigs into the gaba's mouth that it can stand no more, it vomits them out all over the battlefield, thus raining down horrible gnashing squigs upon the enemy. Playing the squig gaba in Warhammer Fantasy would have been another exercise in random rollings, as you had to see what would happen each time you stuffed squigs into the mouth of the squig gaba. Things ranged from the gaba swallowing the squigs and then accidentally burping a toxic cloud, to it firing the squigs across the battlefield, and even producing a flame template and doing damage to itself, its handlers, and anyone in the vicinity on the result of an intestinal explosion. A truly weird unit that was a very random and fun thing to take in games, and arguably more useful than the upcoming Colossal Squig. The Colossal Squig could be found in the 2012 Monstrous Arcanum for 8th edition. I believe it could also be found in the Storm of Magic, because I think it was a summonable monster in that expansion. The Colossal Squig is the be-all and end-all of the Cave Squig line. It dwarfs both the regular Cave Squig and the Great Cave Squig by a factor of many times. If you could have a super heavy squig, this would be it. It was a very interesting monster. Not a good monster, but an interesting one. These beasties were said to roam the deepest, darkest depths of the mountains, especially the Grey Mountains. They are movement 4d6, weapon skill 2, ballistic skill 0, strength 6, toughness 6, 6 wounds, initiative 1, d6 attacks, leadership 3. It was one unit for 135 points. I'm really not sure what they were going for with the Colossal Squig. 135 points is awfully cheap, but he is weapon skill 2 with between 1 and 6 attacks. He's not going to hit much. However, he does have a special rule that when he dies, he falls apart. He kind of explodes in a steaming pile of guts and goo, and any model in base contact suffers an automatic strength 3 hit. He also has the special rule, dinner is dinner, which means that he does not care whether he is fighting friend or foe. He's just going to attack whatever is in front of him. Even at 135 points, I don't think the Great Cave Squig was particularly good. And if it seems like I'm picking on this one in particular, it's because I have this model. I have the Great Cave Squig model. I love the model. I think it's really good. I got to get it painted one of these days. But I would never use it in Warhammer Fantasy, unfortunately, with this profile. I think it's really bad. You could maybe use it as a distraction at 135 points, but there's not a whole lot here, unfortunately. And even lore-wise, we don't get, other than them being super massive cave squigs, there's really not a whole lot that is unique about them. The Warhammer Fantasy version of the squig has really taken over the design space for squigs for Games Workshop. And while I love it, it's a classic design, And I'm sure it's a very easy design for the sculptors at Games Workshop to sculpt. I think there is something lost in not having that variety of squigs that we see described in the early eras. One fun thing is that squigs have become a large part of Age of Sigmar, being a central part of the Gloomspite Gits. The Gloomspite Gits is an amalgamation of night goblins, squigs, and trolls all rolled into one army book. And they're really three forces that you can play as one big force or separately as their own things. When Games Workshop released the Gloomspite Gits, they gave us fresh sculpts for both Squig Herds and Squig Hoppers. They added a secondary unit of Squig Hoppers that are kind of Squig Knights. They're goblins in armor with lances. I think they look great. My favorite addition to the Squig Pantheon in Age of Sigmar is the Sneaky Snufflers. These are almost like truffle pig squigs in appearance. They sniff out fungus for the night goblins. I love it as a little bit of world building. I don't know if they're any good on the table. It's nice to see that the tradition of the squig carried on after Warhammer Fantasy. They redid the Mangler squigs and made them bigger and into a centerpiece model, and I believe that they are a mount as well in Age of Sigmar, so you can put your general up on top of them and do all sorts of silly stuff. All in all, the Warhammer Fantasy Cave squigs have really taken over the design space for Games Workshop, and they've gone in some really interesting places. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode. This was a really fun one to make, and I learned a lot about the early history of the orcs in Warhammer 40K that I didn't know, and hopefully you learned about some squigs that you didn't know about today, or some things about orcs and goblins. That's going to be it for this episode. Until next time, happy wargaming. Thanks for listening to this episode of the War Games Orchard. If you enjoy the show, why not support us on Patreon? Our Patreon is non-tiered, and for as little as a dollar, you can enjoy monthly bonus episodes, stories, and even more content coming soon. In this month's bonus episode, Scott and myself sit down and make 100% randomized Warhammer Fantasy roleplay characters from first edition. We let the dice decide literally everything about these characters, and the resulting characters will surprise you. They sure surprised us. That episode goes live this week. If Patreon's not your thing, please consider giving us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice and sharing this show with friends. You can get in contact with us by joining the Warhammer Orchard community on Facebook or by email at wargamesorchard@gmail.com. Getting squiggy with it. Na 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 na